Welcome back, guys. My name is Gabby Sykora. So today we continue with the awesome chat I was having with John Kinghorn. If you missed it, go and have a listen to last week's episode to get up to speed. So let's continue.
Was that red-chested fluff tail you guys were busy looking for?
Yes, so we're looking for red-chested, Umschlange, and then a Princess Grant, the striped, was calling right in front of us.
Oh, my soul.
Yeah. Which is lovely, so anyway.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. I mean, with striped fluff tail now, the birds, yeah. I mean, there's so many sites where people are busy getting them, and they're like, John, listen, they're calling here, it's really good here, but it's almost like I'll see it when I see it. Like, I've given enough effort to the bird right now. It's one bird, you know, if I'm in an area, then I'll try and find it, but I'm not going to go through all the effort. But who knows, maybe it's even number 900 on my list for Southern Africa. We'll have to see.
Well, that'd be awesome if it is.
I know. I'm trying to, ideally, if I could get African pit, I mean, if you think my love-hate relationship with striped fluff tail is bad, my one with African pit is even worse. I don't know. At the moment, it's a bit of a toss-up between which one do I plan to have scheduled as number 900, if it's a possibility. We might have to see. Might still be many more years.
Well, that's a great problem to be in, if you think about it.
Yeah, but in the same breath, it's also, like, I must be honest, I envy people who, and I guess that's also what I enjoy about guiding quite a lot, and sharing birding with a lot of people, because you are, you have that opportunity to witness somebody seeing something for the first time and through their eyes. It's all fun and games racing around Southern Africa and sitting with a list which is borderline on 900 out of, 990 odd species. But life is then off few and far between, whereas other birders can go out birding and walk away with, 10 lifers, 15 lifers at a time. And, that's also is what is appealing to me, and I think many other guides as well. But certainly from my point of view, it's why I enjoy sharing that passion with other people, be it on tours or be it with family members or friends or whatever the case might be. It's just seeing the bird and witnessing that experience, being in that moment with them when they see something for the first time. I think that is probably the closest thing or emotion to me having seen it for the first time, a specific species for the first time. That's what makes it really special. So yeah, I must admit, I do envy people who still have many, many more lifers to go. So my advice is enjoy every single new edition. Don't chase the numbers. Enjoy the moments. The numbers will come. The numbers will come. If you are after numbers will come. But don't jeopardize the moment and the experience just because you're chasing a number.
Yep, exactly. Well, you would be really happy for me then. Like, you would have been so excited. I got 61 new lifers in the Cape. So yeah, that was quite the experience too.
That's incredible. But that was recently, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We did the garden route this December.
Yeah.
I managed to get 61 new lifers. So
that's insane. What is your list on now?
Gosh, I'm not actually sure. 520 something. Gosh, I should actually know that.
Jeez. Yeah. Okay, yes, so you actually hit the 500 mark. Well done. That's proper impressive. I wasn't even on 500. There's some seriously, like, just on the topic of young birders getting really good milestones, there's some seriously impressive young birders with high totals, around your age, 16, 17, 18. It's really, really, really impressive. To be on 500, at the age of 16 is really, really good. It's really good. Flip.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I've just had a look now. It's 523 in 2.5 years of birding, so it's not that bad.
Very nice. No, the exact number that I was on before I started my big year. So now all you need to do is not find any more lifers until you matriculate, and then take an entire year to travel Southern Africa and see 800 species in a year, and then you're sorted.
I don't think that's going to happen. With a boyfriend named Luca, I don't think that's going to happen, honestly.
The envy might be a bit too real.
Yeah. Okay, so like you just mentioned, there are quite a few young aspiring birders popping up. And I think it's something that we all really love to see. And I know I speak for most when I say that you're probably one of the biggest inspirations in the birding community. So I'm sure many would be actually keen to hear your advice on the process of getting your bird guide qualification through FOGASA. So can you just give us a little more insight into what you went through and how that experience was?
Shame. Thanks, Gibbs. I on a daily basis try my best to be or provide something beneficial to anybody out there. So be it youngsters, be it like-minded people in the profession or nature enthusiasts. I want to wake up and not provide something beneficial to somebody on a daily basis. That's kind of like my daily goal. So it's great to hear that some people are benefiting from it. So that's really good news. And I mean, it's if somebody's interested in if somebody's interested in going into the field of avi tourism and becoming a specialist bird guide, then obviously I'll try not give the long-winded answer. I'll try to give the straightforward answer as quick as possible.
Yes, please.
So there's a couple of things that one would need to do, but essentially you need to get a qualification which is recognized by the Department of Tourism, and which is the equivalent to a certain NQF level with CATSETA. So the best and most common option is to go through the Field Guides Association of South Africa, and to get your entry level NQF level 2 FOGASA qualification through them. And your NQF 2 is essentially your apprentice field guide, or the old level 1 field guide. Remember, there's 3 different tiers of qualifications when it comes to FOGASA. Obtain your entry level 1/apprentice field guide qualification, get qualified as a professional field guide, and then from there you can look at qualifying as a specialist bird guide, either by region or nationally. So FOGASA focuses on providing regional bird guide qualifications insofar as biomes are concerned, and you can qualify as a specific regional bird guide for a biome, or you can go and complete all of the biomes and all of the assessments for in order to obtain your national bird guide qualification. Now, I must pause to say that it's not necessary to qualify as a bird guide through FOGASA to be a bird guide. In fact, it's not necessary, if I'm thinking knowledge-wise, specifically knowledge-wise, to qualify with FOGASA in order to be a bird guide. You have to qualify with FOGASA or any other organization which is going to give you a certificate which is recognized by the Department of Tourism, so that you can register with the Department of Tourism and professionally and legally guide within South Africa. That is important. It's a legal requirement to legally guide within South Africa. But a lot of these bird tour operators, companies that are running global birding and bird watching tours, the only reason they're interested in you having your FOGASA qualification is so that they know that you can legally guide within South Africa, which if you're coming from South Africa born and bred, then obviously that's going to be one of the areas you lead most of your tours in before they start sending you further abroad to gain more experience in different countries. And it's literally just checking a box for them so that they can legally have you guide for them as a company. But they're more interested in your knowledge, your experience, your willingness to learn, and how you've gone about your birding journey. So from my personal point of view, and with regards to my personal story, what counted in my favor was having started birding at such a young age. And obviously having an interest in guiding came naturally along with that. But for years, before I'd even been offered a position with one of the bird tour companies, I had I had spent hours and hours and hours behind books and on the internet reading about destinations, not just thinking about South Africa, but looking abroad at different countries, different birding destinations, and networking with people. And if you can establish a name for yourself, which in today's day and age on social media is actually, I want to say, relatively easy, because if we look in terms of birding, especially locally birding here in South Africa, there's not many big birding personalities on social media. So if you can establish yourself and create a name for yourself and get yourself out there and network, starting from a young age already, you're already busy picking up the attention of these operators who are continuously looking for new blood to bring into the company. My suggestion is to, yes, qualify so that you can legally guide within South Africa. But I think at the crux of this and on a much deeper level is making sure that you network, establish a name for yourself, and C, do your best to just spend time behind, books, field guides, on the web, exposing yourself to a whole bunch of different birding destinations so that when you engage and network with these people, they will know that your knowledge is a lot deeper than your 400 or 500 odd species on your Southern African life list, and they'll know that there's potential. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's what I would suggest if you would want to, if somebody listening to this wants to qualify as a specialist bird guide, it's all about building up a strong foundation. It's one thing getting the FOGASA qualification and the qualification recognized by the Department of Tourism. It's another thing creating a name for yourself and making sure that you know what you talk about so that when you network with people, you're coming across with somebody who has immense potential to adapt to new destinations. And that's what being a specialist bird guide is about. You're not limited to one destination. You're sent across the entire planet, essentially, to bird. And you can be allocated to a tour which is going to be taking place in a month or 2 months or 2 years. But if you're allocated to a tour in a month and you've never been to that destination before, the onus is on you to get yourself up to scratch and bring your knowledge up to scratch so that you are competent to lead that tour. So spending time behind books, researching, getting familiar with these destinations, that all shows characteristics to these companies that they are interested in, which show that you are an individual that will be able to adapt to anything that they might throw your way.
Okay, so guys, I hope you all listened to this valuable advice. Thanks so much, John. So now you are currently working for Afri Avian Environmental, am I right? Tell us a little more about what this entails and like what you do.
Yeah, so I was obviously guiding pre-COVID, and then COVID came and altered the lives of many, including mine. So I then, thankfully, I had, when I left school, although I was working full-time as a guide and in the bird guiding industry, I still studied my LLB degree through UNISA. So it gave me the flexibility to study remotely. I mean, there were times where I spoke about Papua earlier. I mean, I was busy flying to Papua and I was busy juggling time differences so that I knew when I needed to submit assignments for UNISA. And I was like sitting on the plane, you know, Emirates Airline flight number, and I'm busy sat there with my laptop and textbooks, and the poor chicky boo next to me is trying to sleep and I've just got the lights on, busy trying to submit assignments before the deadline. So
no.
I was fortunate enough to do my LLB, because then when COVID hit, I needed to make a plan. I then left guiding completely. I then took 2 years to do my articles to result in being admitted as an attorney. And then once my article period ended, I then said, this is great and I thoroughly enjoy law, but I need to get back into conservation and avar tourism. So I took the decision to start my own company up again, called Untamed Birding and Wildlife. And with that, and whilst that's sort of in its beginner phases of getting up and running and out there, it obviously takes a whole lot of time and effort. and now having to repeat the whole process after COVID, and having just spent, you know, 2.5-3 years before COVID having done the exact same thing. But anyway, so decided to do that. And but I wanted to bring a different aspect to my whole approach on the thing. And I didn't just want to do guiding. I didn't just want to take groups out across the world, you know, do the same routes, the same set departure itineraries. I wanted to be more involved on a high level in terms of the conservation of birds and the conservation of the habitats that the birds are in. And it was great because I managed to make contact with an old colleague of mine, actually, who works for the company AfriAvian Environmental, which is run by Albert Frunemann, who's an incredible photographer and an incredible conservationist. And we essentially go out there and do environmental impact assessments, but specifically the birding component, so the avifaunal assessment component of that environmental impact assessment for wind and solar farms. So contrary to what many people think, you know, we don't exactly go out there with the sole mission of shutting down these projects at conception. We go out there and our job is to make sure that we mitigate correctly, so that we make sure that the birds get the best result and everybody gets the best result. I mean, we have a major energy crisis in South Africa at the moment, so we need renewable energy sources. And you know, we can't afford not to have these renewable energy sources, and so that's why we're making sure that we go out there and we're doing the work to the best of our ability to make sure that we can accurately collect the data. And then at the end of the day, the data and the actual construction with the data processing, and then the eventual construction and go ahead of these wind and solar farms is all down to litigation. Legislation. So, you know, if our data is showing that a farm can't go up, then the farm won't go up. But you know, if the data is showing that a farm can go up, then it's about just making sure that the birds in that area are, you know, conserved as best as they can. So it's great. It's the best of both worlds. I am doing guiding still, but I am spending a lot of time in the field doing these avifaunal assessments, which is just another incredible component and professional avenue that any person interested in birds and birding can consider going forward as well. You don't have to, just because you're interested in birds, become a bird guide. You don't have to, you know, be an ornithologist and spend your days lecturing or doing research. You know, you can contribute in other meaningful ways as well. And conservation and stuff like avifaunal assessments is just another avenue that people interested in birds can explore as well if they're looking to get involved in a bird-related profession going forward. So it's awesome. I love it. It's fantastic.
Thank you for that insight, because I actually, like, I was thinking about it and I honestly did not know what you guys did. But now I do. So thank you for that. But John, unfortunately, we are now running out of time. So I'm on to my final question. And that is, if you could give any advice to a young birder like myself, what would it be?
Yeah, so I think I said one of the most important things earlier, and that was don't chase the numbers. Don't chase the numbers and enjoy the experience and enjoy the adventure. So that's definitely one of them. The other thing is for people wanting to get involved in a bird related profession going forward, make sure, and take this from somebody who went through the most because of something completely unforeseen, make sure that you have a alternative, a background in something alternative. My saving grace was the fact that I had a degree in law. I never had any intentions of going and qualifying as an attorney or getting admitted as an advocate, but there I was with a law degree, and the only thing that ended up putting food on my table at the end of the day, having moved out, was the fact that I was able to get a job as a candidate attorney and ultimately do my best to qualify as an attorney. That was the only thing. And the reason I ended up choosing law, I'm not saying everybody must now go and choose law, but the reason I chose law was because, again, I also said it earlier on in the podcast, was that I wanted to find something which I knew would either directly benefit or be of benefit to my love for nature and conservation, or would give me a skill set which I knew I could use in the field of nature and conservation going forward. And I chose law because I knew that it would give me a skill set which I would be able to apply and ultimately help conservation. My words to my folks were, I'm going to take law, I'm not going to enjoy half of these subjects, but I'm going to do it so that I can qualify, because I know that once I qualify, I'm going to have something which will be able to be, which will be useful for conservation going forward. And that is my goal in life. I wake up every single morning and I firmly believe I've been put onto this planet to protect wildlife. And being able to use and apply law into that was my saving grace. So my advice is don't get tunnel vision. Don't get lured into the incredible, wonderful stories that not even specialist bird guides might share with you, but professional safari guides in general. It's an incredible industry. It's hard. It requires a lot of work. A lot of it is romanticized on social media. Only the best is shown, you know. But just make sure that you have something else that you can fall back on. And my suggestion is simply make sure that whether it's a degree or whether it is another side hustle you might have going on, whatever, just make sure that you have something else which, if for whatever rhyme or reason you are prohibited from continuing down your chosen path, you can at least then go onto something else and not necessarily leave the industry as a whole, but at least just move away from it for a little bit and then step back into it when the time is right, which is what I did as well. So yeah, not necessarily birding related advice, but more advice for people and young people who are looking at going into a field of the field of avar tourism. Just make sure that you have something to fall back on in the event that things go pear-shaped. Probably be the best advice that I could give you, because like I said, take it from somebody who went through the most and who really is speaking from first-hand experience here, because it was a saving grace for me. And unfortunately, I know a lot of people, a lot of incredible guides who got lost to the avar tourism industry as a direct result of COVID. They had nothing else. They had no alternative to their name. They didn't have an alternative degree. They literally left, and they were so skilled as birders and bird guides that they were in the industry wholeheartedly and 110% committed. And COVID forced them to make alternative arrangements and leave the industry there to establish themselves for 2, almost 3 years in something completely different, and just simply weren't able to make the jump back. And the birding community is, as a whole, globally, is at a loss because of it. So the new blood, the new potential, the new skills, and incredible young birders moving through the ranks now are no doubt going to be a phenomenal addition to the avar tourism industry. But the importance is to make sure that those individuals aren't lost completely in the event of something unforeseen happening. So it's important to make sure that they can still stay in the industry, and can only do that really by having something that they can keep themselves busy with on the side.
Wow, that is such wonderful advice. Thank you for that. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you, John, and we have to get you back, as I haven't even touched on half of what I wanted to discuss. So we're gonna have to get you back on. But yeah, thank you so much for this chat. It's really been amazing. And we're going to have to do it again soon.
I would love to come back whenever you ask me, Gab. So just shout, you know how to get hold of me. And thank you to everybody who's taken the time to listen. And I hope that they will be able to take something positive out of this episode. But well done for you and the team for where you've taken the Birding Life Youth podcast. It's reached new heights, and it's fantastic. I will very happily admit to the fact that there are many times I'm sitting at the field on these solar projects, and I've got your voice and guests busy going off in the background whilst I'm busy dotting down flight paths of birds. I'm just busy listening to the episodes. So, yeah, hopefully everybody continues to support.
So,
oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you. You can't see me, but I'm smiling from ear to ear now. So thank you so much.
Yeah. So well done. Well done. It's incredible what you guys are doing.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, well, thanks everyone for joining. I'm sure we can all agree that this was an amazing chat. And yeah, I look forward to recording my next podcast really soon. This is Gabby Sikora for the Birding Life Youth Podcast, signing out.